Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's a beautiful day in Atlanta. We hope that you're in a sunny spot wherever you are, and we appreciate you taking time to listen today. Today, I'm very excited about our topic. I hope we bust a couple of myths about old ways to treat venous reflux disease and learn a lot along the way. And I have a studio full of people here with me today, all guests from Vein Innovations, one of the leading people that treat venous reflux disease here in Atlanta, Georgia. So let me introduce you to who I have with me. First, I have the medical director for Vein Innovations, and that is Dr. Daryl Caudill. Welcome, Dr. Caudill.
Thank you so much.
And let me tell you a little bit about him. He is from my neck of the woods in Ohio. He did his medical training and surgical residency at the University of Cincinnati Medical College, and I used to work right down the street at Children's, so we're used to that Hopple Street exit and what happens in Cincinnati. He later became interested in pursuing thoracic and cardiovascular program at Cincinnati, and he's a board-certified cardiac surgeon. He's been practicing in Atlanta a long time, and you're the medical director of Vein Innovations, correct?
Yes, I am.
Very good. And also with me, I have Dr. Frank Ferrier. And Dr. Ferrier received his medical training from the University of Virginia College of Medicine. And did his surgical residency here at Emory and went on to pursue thoracic, cardiovascular, and cardiac surgery at Emory, correct?
Correct.
And you worked as a vascular surgeon for many, many, many years here in Atlanta.
Correct.
And also pursued your certification in phlebology.
Correct.
I just want to hear about that in a few minutes. I think that was new to me when I did research on the show. And I also have in the studio with me two physician brothers, Dr. Alexander Parks and Dr. David Parks. Dr. Alexander Parks did your medical training at University of Missouri, correct?
Correct.
And did your surgical residency in Maryland and then became board certified in general surgery and has worked in the St. Joe's Research Institute. And you're now in private practice as well, correct?
Correct.
Very good. And Dr. David Parks, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background? You just kind of scooted in the door at the last second. We're thrilled to have you.
Well, thanks for having me. I trained at University of Missouri and came to Atlanta in 1988 for residency training at Emory University, and completed my residency in 1993 and joined the practice here in Atlanta, North Atlanta area, and I've been practicing general surgery since.
Great. And before I introduce the CEO, I'd like to hear from all the doctors that I have introduced kind of how you found your way to Vein Innovation. So why don't we start with you, Dr. David Parks?
Well, my brother Alex and I practiced vein treatment on our own as part of our general surgery practice for a couple of years. And we realized that we need more resources in terms of offering types of comprehensive vein treatment that we wanted to offer. And we reached out to David Martin, who has been providing that for the last decade or so in Atlanta. And we talked and thought that us collaborating would be a good idea. And we moved on, and we have since opened a vein practice up in Johns Creek area. I'm very, very excited about that.
Very good. And Dr. Alex Parks, do you have anything to add?
No, I
on
mean,
how
obviously,
you get to Vein Innovation?
Obviously, David and
he
I.
He filled in a lot
yeah.
for you.
But I think one thing to add is that a couple of years before that, vein practice is a little bit unusual for a typical general surgeon. And I did a lot of breast cancer surgery and melanoma surgery. I still do a lot of that. But one of the reasons that sparked our interest is that on a personal level, during Thanksgiving dinner, one afternoon, one Thanksgiving, our wives were both commiserating about their vein problems, and
those wives yeah, can be problematic.
Exactly. And it just sparked a light bulb and said, "Hey, you know, we have wives what are the chances that they both have significant vein problems?" And that kind of sparked a little light bulb to say, "Hey, you know, let's research this and let's look into it and let's see if there's something that we can not only do for our wives but for our patients as well."
Very good. Well, what a great personal story to bring into it.
Yeah.
And Dr. Caudill, how did you end up with Vein Innovations as the medical director there?
I discontinued my practice of cardiac surgery in 2005 because I was tired of taking call, didn't want to work so intensely in the middle of the night. And I decided that I wanted to continue my relationship, though, with patients in some form. And the new innovations in vein surgery, minimally invasive, the new technologies available to treat this disease entity, which is very, very widespread, appeared to be very, very, very good. And we jumped on it and have progressed with it since.
Very good. So you're the new picture of retirement. Work when you want to.
Yes,
on
a steady basis.
I like that. Very, very good. And Dr. Ferrier, how about you? How you ended up at Vein Innovations?
Oh, well, I did vein surgery before this a good bit, and I did chest and vascular too. And when I was at the other institution, I worked there 6 years and decided, well, you know, it's time for me to retire. So I retired for 2 years and just about went crazy. And then I talked to David and decided that I'd joined Vein Innovations with my good friend Dr. Caudill, and we went to town doing well.
Very good. Well, we're happy to have all the physicians here, and I want to take a moment just to introduce you to David Martin, who is the CEO and founder of Vein Innovations. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Tanya. It's nice to be here.
And David has quite an interesting story. I always like to see a healthcare entrepreneur. And David is a registered nurse that got interested in cardiovascular medicine pretty early in your career, it looked like.
Yes, from the beginning.
Yeah, and looked like you became certified as an RN first assistant surgery. And back in the days when we were doing vein stripping and harvesting saphenous veins and things like that, you were involved in the very beginning of that and have seen changes through the years.
That's exactly right. In fact, I worked with Dr. Caudill for many years in heart surgery.
Very good. And you founded Vein Innovations in 2002?
Yes.
And what led to that spark to do something, actually?
Really, I had a friend who was a vascular surgeon. He and I had a couple of small enterprises together, and I thought we could start a vein clinic. I had in mind, though, not a big, expansive, complicated vein clinic. I had a number of staff who could do injections in veins, and I thought we would have a small cosmetic practice. He was the one who, in fact, told me about the new technology that was catheter-based for treating significant varicose vein disease. So we went off and learned about it. I saw a case done and was just amazed at the change between vein stripping and the kind of catheter.
The new technologies we'll be talking about today.
So the new technology changed everything, and I was excited about it from the very beginning.
Well, it's one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to do something about it. So good for you on that.
Well, thank you.
Very good. Okay, well, we're actually going to jump into venous reflux disease and start learning about that now. I also want to let the listeners know, if you're on Twitter at all, we have someone in the studio with us that can take your questions, interact with you, if you interact with us at hashtag DRTRadio. You will get into the studio, and we can work in your questions. So if you're out there listening and you want to go to hashtag DRT Radio, we'll be happy to address that while we're here sitting in the studio. Well, basically, venous reflux disease is talking about the valves that are in our lower extremities actually become non-functional, not working, diseased, whatever the story is. So we have insufficient blood flow coming back from the lower extremities into the heart. And I'm interested for you, Dr. Caudill, just before we get into the anatomy and physiology and the nitty-gritty of it, just to talk to us about, you said at the intro, this is a really widespread problem. And I found the same thing in the research. But can you tell us a little bit about how widespread and what you think that is? I found some pretty big numbers.
Yeah, the numbers are very impressive about the numbers of individuals who suffer from chronic venous insufficiency in the United States. It's widely guessed that somewhere between 60 and 85 million people suffer from significant venous insufficiency, either recognized or unrecognized, but of a significant amount.
Yeah, I read in the research something like 10% of the population, which is a lot.
Exactly.
And is that a worldwide, or is that just here in the United States? Or
My impression is that it's probably worldwide because some of the expatriates and people who have immigrated to the United States from places like Brazil, Africa, even Australia, we are seeing significant amounts of chronic venous insufficiency in these individuals as well.
Very good. Thank you. And Dr. Ferrier, let's go to you. I know that it's got a pretty big spectrum. Let's just talk a little bit about the anatomy and physiology of what's happening. And I know it can be something, as Dr. Park had said, more on the cosmetic side, and it can be a serious health problem with a lot of ramifications. So maybe you can talk about kind of what's happening and then that whole spectrum of disease that we see.
That's a very good question. What happens over time is that if you have a predisposition for the development of varicosities, what normally happens is a patient begins to have some discomfort and heaviness, weakness, swelling in their legs. And pathophysiologically, what happens is the vein wall dilates, and the valves don't come back together. They don't so-called coapt. And if they don't coapt, the venous pressure within the vein wall develops, and they get venous hypertension. And that's because when the valves don't coapt, there's reflux, and the reflux causes additional pain and discomfort. Over time, it gets worse, and the anatomy of the vein changes, and patients become symptomatic. And that's basically very general, but that's basically what happens.
Mm-hmm. And so we see that whole, depending upon the extent of the disease with the veins or the degree mm-hmm. that they work or we don't work, we see minimal problems and we see a lot of problems.
Over time, you see a lot. And there's some predispositional situations where, you know, a patient may have a family history. The ladies may have a number of pregnancies. There may be some coagulopathy they have. Things like that.
Now, while we're talking to you, I read in your bio that you're certified in phlebology. So can you tell us a little bit about what is that process? And that was news to me. I didn't even know there was a certification for that.
Well, in 2007, the American Board of Phlebology was formed. And in 2008, they had the first certifying examination in 2008, which I fortunately passed. And anyway, it's sort of developed. The other thing that's important is AMA now considers as a isolated entity phlebology as a subspecialty in practice. And I think that's a big
Is that pretty recent?
It was 2005.
Okay, so that's pretty recent as far as a specialty goes.
Yeah, in the 1980s, the Society of Vascular Surgeons developed an organization called Venous Society, and that sort of stimulated the interest of vascular surgeons in the subspecialty of phlebology.
Okay, very, very good. Thank you. Dr. Alexander Parks, why don't you share with us what happens to a patient? So we heard Dr. Ferrier talk a little bit about some of the symptoms that a patient may see, but explain a little bit more about how does a patient really present when they come in your office? What's the variety of some things that you see?
Well, they can present in a lot of different ways, but I'll just give you an example that I just experienced yesterday. I was doing follow-up evaluation of a long-standing breast cancer patient of mm-hmm. mine, and she was wearing a relatively short skirt, you know, mm-hmm. above knees, and I noticed that she had significant varicose veins. Mm-hmm. And I questioned her about that after I did the breast examination for follow-up of her cancer. And she just kind of, on a happenstance, mentioned that, you know, my legs ache. At the end of the day, they hurt. She works full-time. She's up on her feet a lot. And she just assumed, she's in her 50s, she just assumed that this is part of aging and being mm-hmm. up on her feet and working full-time. And I suggested to her that that these symptoms are most likely related to her varicose veins, and she... If I were to guess, I'd have a high probability of predicting that she has significant venous reflux because she volunteered very telltale signs of venous reflux disease. So a lot of women and men in general who have some of the more common symptoms that they might attribute to working hard, being up on their feet a lot, mm-hmm. They will have undiagnosed venous reflux disease that we can give them treatment for. And the aching, the fatigue, the pain that they experience at the end of a long day, While that may very well be due to working very hard, but it can often be compounded by venous reflux disease, and we can help these patients significantly with that.
So I'm interested in what is the line like. It was interesting that you brought up a patient that really thought, well, maybe that's just cosmetic, and you were thinking, she's saying that she's aching. So what would be for the patients out there something that they could do to determine that just is cosmetic, or you really should have it checked out?
Well, not only is it just cosmetic, because obviously the veins, the bulging veins that you can see, or the spider veins particular women get that are unsightly and they're not pleased with, but it's the symptoms in particular. Mm-hmm. As physicians, we like to help patients with their symptoms. Mm-hmm. So when they complain of fatigue and achiness in their legs, discomfort after a prolonged period of standing, can't do the kinds of activities that they used to when they were younger, like running, playing tennis. Tennis is a big deal here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm. Alta.
Yeah. And so when they complain that, you know, my legs ache and they hurt and I can't do the things that I used to, and they attribute those symptoms to just aging, I tell them, well, that could be it. That might be it. But particularly if you have varicose veins, there may be something else underneath there that's even more significant, and that there is treatment for, because as physicians, we use the term, you know, does it affect your lifestyle? Does it alter your lifestyle? Do these symptoms...
Does it limit you?
Limit you from doing the things that you want to do, and the things that you want to do would be just to work a full day. Mm-hmm. You know, if at the end of the day you are so fatigued and tired in your legs that you have to put your legs up because you can't stand it anymore, or it may wake you up in the middle of the night because of what we call restless leg syndrome, I tell them, you know, get it checked out. And at Vein Innovations, we offer free vein screening to see if you have reflux, and you can, you know, call for an appointment and sometimes walk in if we're able. And we can evaluate you very quickly for that.
Very good. So, Dr. David Park, let's move on to you. And if that patient then shows up at Vein Innovations, then let's talk a little bit about how you diagnose them. And, you know, we heard a little bit about we can check the actual blood flow. So what actually happens when they show up, and how do you diagnose venous reflux disease?
Well, once a patient comes into our office for a what we call a diagnostic study, they go through a painless ultrasonic evaluation of their leg veins that typically takes about 30 to 40 minutes. And once the anatomy and the reflux problems are identified, then we come up with what we call a treatment map. And then I sit down with the patient, review their symptoms, and do an examination of their extremities. And we sit down and talk about what the results of the ultrasound showed. Mm-hmm. Now, if they're having absolutely no symptoms, then you know they can do the things that we recommend, whether it be compression stockings, engaging in some physical activity if they're not that's not part of their routine, elevating their legs, wearing athletic type shoes rather than high heels if they can, weight loss. All those things are part of the what we call a conservative or non-interventional or surgical means of treating their asymptomatic state. But if they have symptoms that Dr. Alex had mentioned, accompanied by some significant abnormal studies, then we would talk about a treatment plan with them that is minimally invasive, office-based, under local anesthesia. They drive themselves into the office, have the treatment done. They drive home, stop by the store if they need to, and pick up something for dinner, and pretty much get back to their regular activity within 24 hours with very little discomfort associated with the treatment.
So we're going to go in depth into the treatments in a minute, but it sounds like to diagnose venous reflux disease, it's non-invasive. It's a ultrasound plus reviewing the medical history and then sitting down after the consult and coming up with what the next course for that patient is based upon the severity and what they're dealing with.
That is correct.
About how long would an initial consult be for a patient? Would it be an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours?
Oh, no, it would typically be about 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay, coming in and getting checked out is a relatively painless plus quick process, you would
say?
Very
much so.
Okay,
very much
very
so.
Good.
We'll schedule them, and they come in, and obviously we're very cognizant of everyone's time, so we try to minimize the wait, try to stick to the schedule, and so once they get the venous reflux Doppler ultrasound done, then we sit down and review their symptoms, review the maps, and if they are candidates for treatments based on symptoms, and we would talk about that.
Very good. Okay, Dr. Caudill, I'd like to go back to you and actually talk a little bit about, we talked at the beginning of the show about the old vein stripping process versus, and David Martin mentioned the same thing, just the interest in how the technology has changed so that it's minimally invasive now. Could you kind of walk us through a couple of treatments and kind of compare old and new to give us a flavor of what's changed?
Sure. The previous treatments, standard was high ligation of the greater saphenous vein in the groin just as it enters into the deep venous system. And the reason for this was that getting back to reflux disease, the valves not working. The reason all of this is happening in terms of symptoms related to that is because the leg is not draining. So anything that can be done to enhance the drainage of the leg will improve the symptoms of fatigue, heaviness, and swelling. Mm-hmm. Which are really the hallmarks of venous disease. So the crude attempt at preventing this pooling of blood in the leg and forcing the flow of the venous blood into the deep system so it will drain the leg more effectively, this was the concept by about this old method. Our new methods relate only to a needle stick, minimally invasive, all of which is directed both diagnostically and treatment-wise by the Doppler ultrasonography, and it directs our diagnosis of this and our treatment. That allows us to do a finite needle micro-invasive approach into the vein in the distal leg, or closer to the ankle than up. And then we get needle access with the ultrasound guiding us, and we place a either a laser or a radio frequency catheter, both of which do their job by thermal ablation, that is closure of the vein by heat. And then we put anesthesia around it and slowly withdraw those energy methods and deliver that energy to the inner lining of the vein, and it closes it. And the vein, you know, in about 4 to 6 weeks becomes like a piece of dental floss. And the blood is directed again into the deep circulation for more effective drainage of the leg.
Mm-hmm. Now, if they have more than one area that needs treated, do you do them all at once? Do you have to have time in between? How does that kind of work?
This can be done on one leg. Multiple sites of ablation and access is a relatively routine thing. And in order to effect a complete treatment of the leg, this is the desired approach.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've heard about sclerotherapy. Dr. Ferrier, why don't we have you tell us kind of what is that? That's not the same as what Dr. Caudill was talking about, where it's actually a needle stick and, you know, the lasers and everything. It's a different form of treatment.
For the sake of continuity, let me back up a little bit.
Okay.
As Dr. Caudill said, the intravenous laser, radio frequency laser, the next step is, based on the ultrasound findings, which is we can't work without ultrasound. It's developed in about the
19th. It's kind of like looking, so you have to look and see what you've got.
You use ultrasound in diagnosis, you use it during the procedure, you use it in follow-up. But the next step prior to sclerotherapy is to look at some of the larger veins that aren't accessible via radio frequency, intravenous laser, called those large veins that are palpable. In fact, those veins that the patient first notices, not realizing that the real problem is reflux in the great saphenous vein. Mm-hmm. And we approach that through a procedure called ambulatory phlebectomy, where we remove these veins surgically. Under local anesthesia, that's completed. Stage three is to look then at the superficial veins for surface sclerotherapy. So it's a process, radio frequency, intravenous laser, all under the auspices of ultrasound, ambulatory phlebectomy, and then based on the physical findings from the initial part, they move to surface sclerotherapy.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Let's go back to you, Dr. David Park, and talk to us about once we have these procedures done, what can the patients expect as far as the results of them? So maybe for each of the therapies that Dr. Ferrier had brought up, you could tell us what the patients might expect and how long is recovery and what will they notice as far as their symptoms being relieved in cosmetically for sclerotherapy?
Sure. So after ablation of the great saphenous vein, which again is done under local anesthesia, it typically takes about 30 to 40 minutes to do the procedure. Once the patient gets home, they can pretty much do their normal activities. They can walk their dog. Like I said, they can drive home. They can go for a nice walk. Next morning, once they take the surgical dressing off, then they can place what we call compression stockings, and we ask them to wear that for 3 days, and they go to work and go about their doing normal day-to-day activities. In terms of activity, if they're a strenuous athlete, whether it be jogging or tennis players or golfers, I would ask them to hold off for 3 to 4 days before they engage in those mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. And after that, they're pretty much free to do whatever they want to do. Long-term, the expectation is their fatigue and their swelling, their achiness in the legs will improve. The actual visual appearance of the varicose veins will also improve. Certainly, there will be some shrinkage in terms of the large varicose veins that they initially get concerned about. Typically, they do not go away completely, and that's where the phlebectomy that Dr. Ferrier talked about mm-hmm. comes into play. And then some of the spider veins, what we call telangiectasias, they get concerned about the cosmetic appearance of that. Oftentimes, they will improve in terms of they'll disappear after the closure procedure. More times than not, though, that they will require injection sclerotherapy as part of the treatment mm-hmm. Process.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's pretty quick recovery, even for the most extensive procedures that you do. I tend to think mm-hmm. of some kind of intervention, even minimally invasive, being like a couple weeks down, a month down. You're telling me that even active athletes can get back to work within a week or two.
Yes, very much so. Just as a personal note, I'm a runner. Over the last 5 years, I've run 3 full marathons, a number of half marathons.
Oh, enjoyed congratulations.
Running. Thank you. That's form of my therapy. And over the last couple of years, my legs would fatigue and they would have some significant discomfort, particularly after a long run. And I attributed that to sort of the training process or aging process, and it didn't really dawn on me that I could also have venous reflux disease.
Oh, wow. So you're a patient yourself.
I am. And, in fact, I've studied my legs, and sure enough, I had significant reflux, which certainly I'm not here to say that all of my symptoms are because mm-hmm. of venous reflux, but certainly a significant portion of that was contributing to the fact that I was not enjoying the longer runs as much as I used to mm-hmm. and that I would notice some visible swelling of the legs. And so once I studied my legs and realized that there was an underlying problem, I also had the treatment. And it's gratifying to know that what I tell my patient in terms of expectations mm-hmm. and recovery mm-hmm. is exactly what I experience. So it's nice
to... You can tell it like it is.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's just nice to be able to sit down with a patient and say, this is exactly mm-hmm. what you expect, mm-hmm. and this should be the expected outcome. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, I've gone through the same process you're about to go through. And I'm very glad that I did.
So it dawns on me it's kind of a quality of life thing, because since it's not, I'm not hearing any of you say this is like you wake up tomorrow and you have this disease. It's kind of a gradual, chronic kind of a process that the disease kind of comes up and gets worse and worse and worse. And then at some point, it's a quality of life issue. For you, what was the point that you thought, maybe I ought to check myself out?
Well, I mean, the fact that, the longer runs that I used to enjoy running became more laborious for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't enjoy it primarily because of symptoms I was experiencing, mm-hmm. particularly the sense of fatigue and swelling. Mm-hmm. And it is a quality of life. It is not debilitating for most patients. But, the trap that I fell into is, I consider myself relatively healthy. Rather than attributing that to potential reflux disease, because reflux can be found in young patients and mm-hmm. older patients and healthy patients and chronically ill individuals. Nobody's immune to that. Mm-hmm. And I think I sort of assumed that I wasn't part of that for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And to realize that I had this significant problem that required treatment was an eye-opening experience for me.
And now how are your runs?
Much more enjoyable.
Very good. Well, great success story there. Let's go to you, Dr. Alex, and talk a little bit about, we've kind of alluded to, there's variables that play into this. I think I heard Dr. Ferrier say at the beginning, sometimes it runs in families or it's common in families. So could you speak a little bit about how lifestyle, genetics, diet, gender kind of play into venous reflux disease?
Sure. So in previous years, it was almost always thought to be just involving women, but we know that's not true.
Are women more, you see more women more commonly?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That is true. That is true, but we are seeing more men with this problem. And we, in the past, men, number one, may be less conscientious mm-hmm. about the looks of their legs. Mm-hmm. Most men don't wear skirts, mm-hmm. So their legs aren't as exposed
visible.
As much,
mm-hmm.
right? Spider veins tend to be more common in women. But being a woman, having multiple pregnancies, and it can occur during and after pregnancies, approaching middle age years, those are all risk factors. Strong family history, so it's not uncommon for patients to tell me, well, you know, my mother had it, my grandmother had it.
Is there a genetic link?
Not proven genetic, you know, where they can actually identify mm-hmm. the genome, but it's so common for mm-hmm. us to hear patients to say that my grandmother had it. I remember as a young kid, my grandmother had these terrible ropey veins mm-hmm. That could lead to ulcerations and had, you know, terrible swelling and so forth. Your occupation. So if you're up on your feet constantly, we have a lot of healthcare professionals who come to our clinic. Because nurses' aides, mm-hmm. physicians.
Maybe retail workers.
Retail workers, exactly. They're mm-hmm. up on their feet a lot. And those are the risk factors, the major risk factors. Obesity plays a part. It can accelerate that as well. So those are the risk factors that we've identified mm-hmm. that puts patients at the...
And knowing some of those are lifestyle related, like how much you're on your feet or what your occupation is there anything that you advise patients that come to you maybe early in the disease process as far as preventing or slowing down this process?
Right. So one of the things that we can, if they have borderline reflux or mild reflux or no reflux at all, but maybe a strong family history, is that compression stockings are very helpful. And these are not the over-the-counter compression stockings.
The prescription.
That you get. These are the prescription medical-grade compression stockings with up to 30 to 40 millimeters of mercury. I have very borderline reflux in one of my legs. And I started wearing compression stockings just recently. And initially, I didn't enjoy it or didn't feel very comfortable because the pressure didn't. Now I wear them almost every day, and now I can't go without them, particularly mm-hmm. when I'm up on my feet operating 8 to 10 hours a day. And I've noticed that when I come home at the end of the evening, my legs are much less fatigued and heavy and uncomfortable.
I'm wondering about if you see a prevalence. Is it more common to see this disease in one extremity versus the other or both? Like if they have this issue, is it both legs?
It's typically both legs. But it's not unheard of that we
just
only see
one.
It in one leg. Mm-hmm. So the disease
it just seems
process.
Since it's like gravity,
right.
And you know, when you're on your feet, you're on both, not one mostly.
The disease process is diffuse,
okay.
And so it's common that it's the majority of the times it's both legs.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. Dr. Caudill, I'd like to go back to you. I know that we talked about the role that ultrasound technology and laser technology has influenced this particular thing. Are there any new things coming up on the horizon that you all are excited about or you're watching or that's kind of impacting how you treat patients?
The most recent advancement is the wavelength, the new 1470 nanometer wavelength in the laser. This has allowed us to use lasers with a considerable more comfort. Previously, the lasers of the shorter length, original 810, 910, 980, the post-op pain after ablation was considerable. With the new 1470 wavelength lasers, there's no pain of significance post-operatively, and the manipulability of the catheter, that is getting it into tortuous vessels as well as smaller vessels, has been improved considerably, and the results are just fabulous with very little to no discomfort.
Mm-hmm. So one question I'm thinking of while you're talking to me is, I just think as a patient, lasers and veins, little teeny spaces, don't sound like they go together very well, and it prompts my thinking about potential complications. You've said the technology's made it easier and easier for you as far as the procedure itself, but what are the potential complications?
Well, certainly deep venous thrombosis is a potential complication, and as you point out, the refined technologies both in radio frequency ablation and laser have minimized this to a tremendous degree, as well as our experience since 2000 in understanding the pathophysiology and the anatomy and knowing where to apply the thermal energy and where not to apply the thermal energy. I think another big advancement, and it is yet to be proven completely, is the area of treatment of perforators. Perforators are the connections between the superficial saphenous system and the deep venous system. And these, we've known for years, these communications or perforators have been significantly dilated and causing reflux disease, adding to the poor drainage of the leg. And so we're still kind of in a gray zone, but we have been able to, with the new technology, the smaller laser as well as refined radio frequency catheters, we've been able to close these very effectively, and we should in the next 5 years have some very firm data as to the objective results of approach to venous disease in this manner.
Very good. Dr. Ferrier, one of our Twitter followers is asking, as we're speaking here, about the symptoms and asking if since it's related to gravity and circulation of our lower extremities, if heat and cold, like is it a sign of venous reflux disease if their feet are always warm or their extremities are always cold? Does that mean anything?
That's not one of the major.
Not one of the main symptoms?
Not one of the major symptoms. No, it is not.
Okay.
Swelling, aching, cramping.
Fatigue, I heard.
Fatigue.
Pain, discomfort.
Pain, discomfort.
Are more the cardinal signs of venous reflux disease.
Restless leg syndrome, mm-hmm. itching. And if you just look at your legs, you know, let's assume you're standing up all day or sitting as well. But don't forget sitting. And at the end of the day, you know, you look at your legs and they're swollen and tender. And, you know, that something just may be going on. So I think it behooves one to look into that, you know.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for answering that question for our listeners. I appreciate that. We're almost to the end, and we have a couple of things left to share. I would like to open it up if any of you, I know a lot of times we talk about the clinical part of things, but patients that are listening really are listening for stories of how their life dramatically changed. We heard Dr. David talk about his experience. Do any of you want to share about a patient that comes to mind that you took care of that it was just a life-changing thing or really made a difference for a patient?
Tanya, I'd like to bring one up.
Okay.
By coincidence, I opened the mail this morning.
Okay.
And in it is a letter from one of Dr. Caudill's patients, and I obviously won't reveal his name, but mm-hmm. I will say that the letter goes this way. Dear Dr. Caudill, earlier this year you performed surgery on both my legs to repair my very large veins. You may recall my sharing with you some concerns for my recovery as I had a trip planned to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania with his son. He recently returned from this climb, and the letter goes on to say he had a great time, 22-mile return hike where he dropped 13,000 feet in 2 days, and he felt no pain at all, kept up with his fellow climbers who were mostly half his age. He enclosed a couple of photographs as well, but this is the sort of thing that is so touching, where we talk about these quality of life issues and people's lives being negatively impacted by this kind of insidious, slow onset of fatigue and pain with a very rapid resolution after a couple of visits to see Dr. Caudill. This gentleman was climbing mountains.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that, like a lot of patients, we tend to, because it's a gradual onset, we tolerate things because it's a slow onset. We tolerate it, and then at some point, there's the last straw that broke the camel's back.
It's funny. Some patients don't even really notice it. One of our earlier male patients, and this is back when we started in 2002, big guy, was an SEC football official, came to visit us, and he was concerned about his varicose veins. Mm-hmm. He just didn't like the way they looked. Well, we did one leg, and on a Friday, the following Monday, he came to play in a golf tournament with me, and I saw him and said, how's your leg feeling? He said, well, the one you fixed is fine, but the other one is killing me now. So this
so now he sees the difference, yeah, just in his own body,
right,
between
right.
one and the other
exactly.
on the return. Yeah.
So a 50-year-old fellow who was very active and probably had symptoms for 25 years, he's used to this.
Well, I'll tell you another thing is I don't have the experience of venous reflux disease, but one time I broke my foot, and there's nothing like having a compromise in your mobility to get you in there. And I think once we do go in as patients, one of the things that probably you guys hear every day is, man, I wish I would have done this sooner. Like, the recovery is short. I could have been feeling so much better, so much faster, and you don't realize until you feel better how long you tolerated it. So I'm sure you hear that all the time.
That's
very good.
True.
Well, we're going to close the show with you, David, just talking a little bit about Vein Innovations and your practice and where they can find you and how you're set up and how they would connect with you.
Oh, well, we have two clinical offices in Atlanta, one at St. Joseph's Hospital on the campus there, excuse me, and then one in Johns Creek that we just opened with the Doctor's Park. Both offices are full-time offices with full-time ultrasound and full-time medical staff, and we run a full schedule out of both. So we've been in business and in practice since 2003, and I have to say we've worked with a variety of physicians over the years, but mm-hmm. the group we have currently assembled is far and away the best group of physicians we've ever had the pleasure to work with. So we're very happy with all of them, all of our, in fact, all the ancillary staff in both offices are just terrific to be around.
Mm-hmm. And both facilities have full capability, so you could have your procedures done at either one.
Absolutely.
Okay, very good.
And in each facility, we do the ablative procedures that Dr. Caudill has been talking about, the phlebectomy that Dr. Ferrier talked about, which I want to bring up. This really requires a certain set of surgical skills that cannot be acquired outside the operating room. This is one of the reasons only surgeons work with us at Vein Innovations. Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important distinction, both understanding the anatomy from a surgical point of view and being able to really pry these delicate tissues out without scarring and without causing pain.
Yeah, the expertise of the cardiovascular surgeon is really critical and for the success of the patient.
Absolutely, and the general surgeon as well. These are very highly skilled people working with us. So, yes, and so sclerotherapy as well. We have nurses who typically perform the sclerotherapy. For the most part, they do nothing else. So,
they're
specialists. At the St. Joe's office, for instance, we'll do 150 sclerotherapy sessions a month. Mm-hmm. So these guys are busy and very, very good.
Very, very good. And let's let patients know exactly your website and phone number.
It's www.veininnovations.com or greatlegsforlife.com, either one. Our phone number in Atlanta is 678-731-9815.
Okay, very good. Well, believe it or not, gentlemen, we are at the end of our time together. I so appreciate all you being here. Dr. Ferrier, Dr. Caudill, Dr. Alex Park, Dr. David Park, thank you so much for coming. David, thanks for assembling a great team, and I think we learned a lot today. So for all you listeners out there, tune in again next week, and we'll look forward to having you back.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.